further testimony?
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, for allowing me to go vote. They will come back up and get me for another vote. But there's been a lot of interesting questions about the aquifer and how much water is there and how it gets recharged and things. So I think those are valid questions. The point I want to make is when you take water out of the ground with a private well, with limited exception, you are not dumping it into a city municipal facility, causing it to go down the lake, streams, and rivers to lose it out of that watershed. If we're going to monitor and you really want to be safe on the aquifers, and it's something we do not do, we do not monitor how much water goes down the river from those municipal plants. We ought to be, because that's the only way we're going to guarantee long-term that we have water for everyone in the state of Minnesota. And it's, again, something I've been fighting since 1992. Technology is such that new treatment plants that treat to go back into the groundwater, whether it's groundwater recharge or aquifer recharge, are cheaper, smaller, more efficient than anything we use today. Most of the engineers don't understand. And by the way, I'm not an engineer. My technical title is I'm a biochemistry process designer. What I do is when somebody tells me I have this to get out of the water, I design the process to get it out and let engineers put it on paper. I've worked in 36 states and 4 foreign countries. I do understand water pretty well. If you're worried about that groundwater, we should be monitoring what the cities dump out. And what's kind of neat, too, is if you ever looked at a wastewater treatment plant, members, most of them are where? On the edge of a lake or a river. If we could change that attitude, and I'm not talking about overnight, it takes money, treat the wastewater differently, move those plants away from that most valuable land so the cities could recover a lot of money, you can put these plants virtually anywhere and make sure that you're putting the water back where it came from. And if we don't change that attitude now, that's when water will become gold, and that's why I'm so passionate about it, members.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, Senator Kalish.
Mr. Chairman, I'll give you your official title, Senator Youngbauer. And one of my concerns about this is that I've been hearing in environmental committees and different spots where we are not recharging our water and all over the state as quickly as recharging our aquifers as quickly as we're pumping it out. And one of the things that bothers me about this is it's all-inclusive. It's like the city could have absolutely could not use any reason at all to prohibit water use. And we can't sit here and, I mean, just like you can say this cheese factory could do better if they had a private well, you could also say that the city developed their water system in order to supply the cheese factory and maybe they need to get it paid for. But my point being is that this is takes any local control over the regulation for and gives the cities, anybody that is in charge of regulating water in their community, they have no excuse good enough to try to stop a well, according to this. So it's an all or nothing bill, and that's one of the things that bothers me.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Kalish, that's a good point, except I'll make a couple of other points. Is number one, nobody in the cities is smart enough to figure out what they should be regulating on the wells. I guarantee you, because they're not hydrologists. They're not soil scientists. They don't understand. And as Mr. Hoppe said earlier, these aquifers run great distances under the states. So even if you regulate it in a small city, you can't figure out where the water's coming and going to. The second thing is, doesn't it seem rather strange to put the hands of the regulations in the very people that are moving that water away from their watershed and moving that water away in such a way that it never will return and never will refill the aquifer? And, Senator, I'd love to sit with anyone and show you some of the research projects I've worked on in hydrology and show you some of the things that cities have done that have caused the aquifer recharge to not work the way it's supposed to.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungauer, my point was that there is not a single reason or does not allow any reason that a city might want not to allow wells, including because cities are responsible for their community and making sure they can pay for a water system, having and making sure that investment that the city has made in water is not undermined by the local homeowners that decides they want to put a well in. And you know, that just puts the cost on everybody that's left. So there is a reason why you wouldn't want to maybe allow a lot of wells, and maybe one well is fine. It's up to the city. But my point being is that you don't allow any options. There's no reason why a city or any kind of a monitoring could stop a well from going in, even if there's good reasons for it.
And Mr. Chair, Senator Kielash, I'm very happy to put some modifications in here. For example, if a city was doing what they're supposed to be doing, like what Met Council is going to be working on in the city of East Bethel, if they're keeping the water in that watershed, if they're recycling the water, let them make sure that there's no other wells working through that or against that type of system. But again, to charge the citizens for something that long-term will take their own water away seems rather ludicrous to me as well.
Mr. Hoppe, did you want to jump in?
Yes, I would. There is clearly a statute that allows a city to be delegated under 103I. They can be delegated plain as day by the MDH for construction of wells. It's already allowed under the water law. And that's specifically to your question is you're trying to say that they can't regulate what's in their town and how it's constructed. Yes, they can. All they have to do is go through the program with the MDH, get it lined up. There are several cities, several counties that have that authority. But it all falls back on the state to make final decisions, yes, because they have the hydrologists on staff. But then they get the permitting process. They get the right to say yes or no here or there. So there is a process set up for that already. So clearly 103I, the water law, clearly does do what you're saying. It does give the cities an option if they're worried about construction of wells in their city.
So I think that it looks like the league might want to come up and testify.
Do we think? Yes.
Should we move on to those that may be opposed? Welcome to the committee. If you could state your name for the tape, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Craig Johnson, representing the League of Minnesota Cities. Appreciate the time that Senator Youngbauer has spent arguing about this with me on stairs and hallways around the Capitol over the last few months here. I need to start off by saying respectfully, even with the delete all amendment, the League very strongly opposes this legislation, and I'm going to try and explain why and try and answer your questions about that. First of all, the discussion that you've been having for the last few minutes about water going downstream and about trying to reuse and recycle water to avoid that outcome really has very little to do with this bill. This bill is about people wanting to put a well in to irrigate their land. So that water is going the exact same place, whether it comes from the city water system or their private well. And it's about companies. The examples you heard were a cheese factory and a shampoo company who want to take the water out, put it in their product, and ship it away. In both cases, that water is going exactly the same place regardless of who owns the well that's doing it. So I want to set all that aside and talk about what the issue really is about here, and that's what our cities are trying to deal with in providing safe, reliable, affordable drinking water to their citizens. It's a major priority for our cities. We spend billions of dollars to do this, and I want to walk through how this can affect that. And, Mr. Chair, point out that we actually have a number of folks here who can testify to what type of expertise, planning, and engineering our cities have on hand to deal with that. To start off with, we have elected officials in our cities to deal with these issues. It's a very, very local decision. In many of our cities, it's not a question of we're using the high-quality groundwater for purposes that aren't drinking water. It's the only aquifer. If you drink water from the well or drill it for irrigation, it's going into the same aquifer and it's pulling water out of the same aquifer. So it becomes a very important decision for a community to decide, how do we decide where that water comes from? How do we treat it to make sure no one uses it for the wrong purpose and gets sick and sues the city? And how do we protect public health, safety, and welfare, which is the requirement cities have in their local governance? I understand the frustrations of the folks that are the well drillers. We have phenomenally well-trained, well-qualified, well-tested well drillers in this state. These same folks that are asking for your help getting business right now are the same people that drill our municipal wells. We count on them. But the fact that there is very little development going on in places right now that need their own private well for the new development doesn't mean we should just open up places that have had very deliberate processes to decide how to best protect the public to well drilling. We have a lot of types of businesses in this state that we have to regulate, and you can't always build them everywhere you want to build them. You sometimes have to look for where a community has determined your type of business is appropriate and work within that community. I would add we have very few communities in this state who have prohibited wells being drilled. Most, it's a case-by-case basis. You come in, you make your case. We have many that if you already have a well on your property, a private well, they allow you to use it for irrigation. You don't have to use the city water for irrigation. We have others that have found that because of the water supply, because of concerns about other types of issues with water quality or quantity or with the investment in their infrastructure, they have to make a change. They have to have an ordinance that prohibits certain use types of well drilling. I want to start then with water rights because that was a discussion that came up a little bit earlier, and I know it's one of the author's favorite issues to talk about. So I just want to point out that Minnesota, to start with, in our country we have some common water law. We fall under Eastern water law here. And under Eastern water law, water, drinking water, surface water, is a public interest. Western water law, it's a private property. Western water law works differently. We don't fall under that under federal law. But we also have significant Supreme Court-level action in this state and precedent that establishes that. In fact, very, very clearly says that the first priority for water rights in the state of Minnesota is for public water supplies, for domestic use. Flat out, over and over. It's clear in case law. It's clear in common law. We have riparian water rights, but that's the littoral water rights for shoreland areas. It's along lakes and rivers, and it includes access to lakes and rivers. Does not include rights to use of water under property for personal use. So I just wanted to start with that clarity, and that's why our water law, it's why the statutes you're looking at right now are drafted the way they are. It's why it's clear in statute right now that cities have the authority to regulate the use of waters, cisterns, and that wonderful long list of other things we don't use as much as we used to anymore. But it also is why we really need to be careful about how we make changes to that law. The real issues on this are really four. There's water quantity, water quality, customer rates, and the financial viability of public infrastructure. So I'm just going to run through those fairly quickly, Mr. Chair. I know you don't want to take forever on this. So with water quantity, cities have a very, very thorough process they have to go through because virtually all city public water systems fall under the requirements of the Department of Natural Resources for water appropriations, more than 10,000 gallons a day, more than 1 million gallons a year. That means we have to have a summer water use plan for how we're going to control water use in the summer to make sure it doesn't peak too high. We have to have emergency water use plans to make sure we know if there is an effect that wasn't expected on water supply. How do we respond to that? What regulations, what restrictions do we put in place to make sure the water supply is not damaged to the public detriment and it is not unduly tapped at times where it's stressed? We have to have federal requirements for groundwater vulnerability assessment that are filed annually with the Department of Homeland Security for every possible place someone could try and damage public water in a way that a terrorist might choose to do that. And we have to say exactly how we're going to protect that from happening in all of our cities with public water supplies. This is all very essential stuff, and we spend a tremendous amount of money and time and resources to do it. Water quantity gets affected fairly quickly by this. If you switch from having to pay to irrigate your property to having to only pay for the electricity to run a pump to irrigate your property, you can guess which one causes you to think you can let the pump run a little longer. And we have seen that in situations already. The city of Elk River saw a dramatic increase in water use from a private well that went in to be used for irrigation. The other issues with water quantity are simply that we don't have a control on it at that point and we don't have information. We know how much water is going through our public water systems. We can measure that. But as soon as you start adding public wells and not knowing what they're drawing, you don't have good information on that any longer. And the only way the Department of Natural Resources would be involved with these private wells is if they were very large water users, 1 million gallons a year, more than 10,000 gallons a day. Other than that, there would be no Department of Natural Resources involvement, even if there were 300 of them in one city. They don't do a cumulative look. It's permit by permit, application by application. Second thing that we talked about was who regulates wells. Construction of wells and the repair and sealing of wells, as you heard from the Department of Health, is regulated by the Department of Health. It is true that cities can be delegated. To do that, a city must form its own Department of Health and staff it, and then they would be authorized to regulate construction, repair, sealing of wells, and certification of people would be done through the state still. That's a statewide system. However, it still does not deal with the amount of water being used. The Department of Health doesn't have that authority, and their delegation of their authority would not include that. So without that land use planning and ordinance level of authority that cities currently very clearly have, if that's removed, there is no one else that looks at how to deal with those water uses when they're applied for. On water quality, there can be a tremendous amount of impact on that. We have very significant issues with that all the time, and honestly, even our people who are hydrologists have a hard time figuring this out. Folks remember the 3M chemical fund we had in the eastern suburbs. Followed the plume, said, okay, here's where the PFOAs are being found. Oh, they're getting stronger. Yep, that's exactly what we thought. Look at that. It goes right down through Cottage Grove, ends at the Mississippi River. Groundwater goes into the Mississippi River there, so that must be the end of it. Let's do one test on the other side of the river. Well, wait a minute. It's stronger there. But we thought the groundwater all went into the river. So how did that happen? Well, we're doing a lot of science right now to find out. But we regularly find out that water is flowing and moving in ways we didn't know. And what we do know is that by adding if you have three city wells here, here, and here, you know what effect that's having on the groundwater levels because we have to do monitoring of that as part of our city permits. You add another well over here, and now you don't know. Where is it going to move that water? The water moves around, as the testimony from the well drillers commented on. It moves. And when you add a new outtake someplace, it changes the direction and what soils that water moves through. And it can suddenly move through a contaminated area it didn't used to have to flow through. And now you have a problem for the public water supply because a new private supply is taking water and causing the water to flow differently. It can be very complex, and it can cause a significant water quality issue. Can also have a large draw in a way that causes the end of the aquifer in the local area where the water is being pulled for public use to, in low water conditions, have much higher concentrations of minerals or other contaminants. Because the water is being pulled somewhere else, the concentration of the contaminants where there's less water suspended in that soil or in that material would be higher. And that can be very, very hard, almost impossible to predict ahead of time. On rates, Mr. Chair and members, this is a very significant issue. If one user of a major type in a utility pulls out, it doesn't change the public debt that's owed on that infrastructure, and it does not change the O&M costs of keeping that system running. It just means that every other business in town and every other resident in town will now have a rate increase to cover those costs. So one person will no longer pay their water bill, and the rest will pay what those people were paying. The infrastructure is there. And we can't build public water supplies counting on the fact that maybe a third of the people will cut out and do their own well. We have to build it to supply the water needed by our citizens and our communities. So you have to build the full infrastructure. And once you do that, you've got public debt. And that's my final point, is the financial viability of these utilities is a factor in this. When you have a relatively small community that's needing to spend $1.5 million to put in a water system, and they can't assure the funders at the Public Facilities Authority in this state or the bondholders that would be holding their public debt that they can have the necessary supply of ratepayers to pay off those sometimes 30- and 40-year bonds if you're going through USDA, there's no chance we'll be able to get reasonable public financing for public infrastructure any longer. And it can really literally put a utility in the position of having to worry about financial viability based on individual decisions made by property owners in the district that they would no longer have any control over any further. So, Mr. Chair and members, I would just ask respectfully that this is an issue that really is community by community. The water supply, the water quality, the infrastructure and what state it's in and what costs there are to keeping it in whatever state it needs to be in are very, very independent, community by community. The load of customers is very, very different. Some have almost entirely residential bases. Some have a very large industrial user, one, and then the rest is a residential base, and some have a very diverse water mix. And you can't have a one-size-fits-all solution in these communities. They all need to have different rules. And finally, we have these local elected officials, mayors and city council members, for that reason, to look at what's in the best public interest, public health, safety, and welfare. How do we provide this drinking water resource and this water use resource in the most responsible manner, balancing the needs of everyone in the community? We're asking that you leave that in place so that they can continue to do that work. Happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Senator Youngbauer.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm looking at people's faces, and this is a lot to digest in one hearing. And by the way, Mr. Johnson's doing so darn good. Yeah, we've been doing this for years, going back and forth. This is our ninth year on water stuff. And by the way, I do know about the PFAS and PFOA that's going through. The karst topography over there, it does flow differently, so I understand the hydrology over there. Very good. What I kind of like to get a sense from the committee, are we able to give you enough information today to make a informed decision? Otherwise, honestly, from both sides, I'd rather almost table the bill if you don't think you can get the right information today and let people give you that information, because it is a serious issue on water. I started out saying the issues I thought were here. But I don't want everybody to look at me with funny faces, and if we can't give you the answers today, that can make you...
That's the way I look, Senator Youngbaugh.
Okay. Those that know me, other than the new folks, know I love to get a lot of information, and I've had committee chairs actually ask me, and I've asked them to table bills so that I could get information. And just reading faces, I'm like, well, I don't know if we have the right people here to give you a good sense to vote on today, and I don't want to cheat people out of that information, so... Maybe a few committee members could say how they're feeling, I guess, to know what we should do to continue. I don't want to take all day if we're not going to get the right information.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Youngbauer, I appreciate the opportunity to learn more about this. This is really the first discussion that I've been in on this issue. But before, and so I favor your tabling this issue. But before we let some of the testifiers go, there are some questions that I would like to have answered, if Mr. Chair would allow that.
Certainly.
All right, thank you. Well, I understand the importance of protecting our water quality. I think everybody in this room, every person in Minnesota wants to protect that quality. We understand that. But what I am concerned about is the two issues. One is using costly drinking water for things that are non-consumable. And we had some of those described earlier. And, you know, what's a way that we can make sure that that doesn't happen? And then the other one actually reminds me of my father, and this has to do with sewer charges. My dad was so incensed over sewer charges on his, and this is just in our residence, that he literally drove out to his gentleman's farm and brought in his hobby farm. He brought in a pickup load of buckets, 5-gallon buckets of water from his artesian well, because he didn't think it was right that he had to pay these sewer charges. And this was for just my mom and dad. It was a small entity, but it was a matter of principle with him. He was upset that he had to pay sewer charges for this water, for watering the flowers. And he just didn't think that was right. And so I can understand how a large business would be quite concerned about paying sewer charges for water that's going into shampoo bottles. And so how can we protect our groundwater supply without making our businesses pay sewer charges on water that's not going in the sewer? And how do we not waste costly drinking water on non-consumable uses?
Anyone care? Mr. Johnson?
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, I think those are excellent questions. They're partly related to this bill, but mostly not. But I think they're very well worth discussing. The first part on sewer charges, we have some utility folks here that could give you really good answers on that. But the short version is, it's really hard to try and measure sewage outflow and water inflow to a property both and bill separately for each, and they can discuss how that works. But if you think of what goes down a drain, it can be hard to put a meter in place that measures that accurately. That's the shortest answer. The use of the water going in as the base for the rate, I think is just based on that's the likely maximum possible load the customer could have on it, on the system. And those are sometimes changed and negotiated based on the fact that they have very little outflow coming from their system. The second piece on this, the use of costly drinking water for non-potable uses, that is related to the other issue that Senator Jungbauer was talking about before, water, using different sources of water for those low-quality uses. It's why most of our cities now are going around telling people you should put those rain barrels back out. Your grandma was right. That's a good way to water your water, or water your plants. Put out a rain barrel under your eave and collect that water and use that for watering your plants. Excellent idea. There's other places where we're taking water that has been treated maybe only through secondary treatment. And rather than spend the extra money on wastewater treatment of sending it through tertiary treatments, which can be very expensive, you take it at that point and funnel it off for industrial uses so that it's being used in a less heavily treated way rather than being discharged to a river immediately. And we get a couple more uses out of it at least before it gets discharged. So those are the kinds of things that do work. But what would happen if we, for instance, eliminated charging people based on the water they use and only charged them on the water they discharge, is we would have lots of people discharging water on their lawns or into the ditches or into their curb and gutter to avoid being charged for it. And we would also have sewer bills for residential customers at many times what they are right now. And that could be a pretty significant factor for a small family or a retired person to have their sewer bill double or triple because we now are only charging based on sewer and that no one has to pay for the water intake. So it gets very complicated. Rates, though, are very heavily negotiated. When a large water user comes into a community, there's a lot of work done to determine what water rate they will get based on what their needs are.
Okay, Senator Robley.
Thank you. And talking about negotiation, I think that so much of this could be avoided if we didn't have such strict conditions so that something like the cheese plant can't put in its own well to meet its needs. I mean, it seems counterproductive to me to think that the cheese plant has to take out the fluoride or whatever the chlorination that you put into the water to use it for their product, and then maybe even have to put something back into it before they can discharge it. I don't know. I mean, some of that is used in the process of making cheese. Doesn't actually go into the cheese, but it's used in the process, I'm sure. But I guess if, I don't necessarily agree with Senator Jungbauer that we should let everybody who wants to irrigate their lawns put in a well. Because I agree with you that then we have no control over how much water is being used from the aquifer, and they will use more because it's coming out without an extra charge on it. And so we do have to protect that aquifer to a certain level, and it's hard to regulate if everybody has their own well. But I just think if we'd use common sense here and say we don't always have to stick with our ordinance or our rule that the city has and allow some exceptions. I mean, even when you think about maybe a school district should have a well, and I was wondering about golf courses. Do they get wells? Because they have to keep some part of their golf course green for their business. But a school district that has playing fields that are used all summer, if they completely dry up, the sod will be completely destroyed because those little people are running all over it. And so, I mean, they have a reason, a common sense reason to put some water on the fields. And, I mean, how do we get to that? How do we just get to common sense?
This is the government, Senator Rowe. Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Roebling, you're exactly right. And here, let me tell you what I can about it. First of all, as I mentioned in my testimony, most of our communities do consider case by case whether it's appropriate. In the case of the cheese factory, the community determined it was not appropriate and passed an ordinance because that's their job. But normally, as I said, we have many communities that allow people to use wells for irrigation because it's coming from a different aquifer, or because they don't have a water supply issue, or because it's a quality of water they're pumping into the irrigation system that doesn't have another public purpose. Those all work. And right now, thanks to the action the legislature took over the last week, we did add one more tool back to city toolboxes, the variance. You can have an ordinance, and you can now have a variance to it saying, actually, in this case, you have a condition where it's a reasonable request. You did not cause the need for a variance through your actions. It exists because of the situation you're in. And it's in the, you know, it doesn't essentially change the nature of the locality to let you do this. And what the legislature further did, and this was in House File 52, which the Senate passed unanimously earlier this week and the House passed unanimously yesterday, it also now says that we can impose conditions on a variance to make sure that any direct impacts caused by that variance are being addressed properly. So we could put in conditions on the variance for hours of watering or amount of water use per year or something like that. I think we have the tools to use common sense. And I think in most of our communities, that's being used every day. It's being applied to every decision that they're being asked to make on water permitting in their locales. Are there cases where we maybe have someone that did something that people didn't like or that didn't seem to make common sense? Sure. But that's, you know, that's also something that the local citizens have to deal with their elected people at that level. If they are regularly making decisions the local community doesn't support, many of you have local government experience. You know how quickly you hear about it and how quickly someone else might be making those decisions. So I guess that's my shortest answer I can give to that, is that I think the tools are now in place for that to be used on a regular basis.
Okay. Did you want to say something?
My name is Ruth Hubbard. I'm the executive director of Minnesota Real Water. We are a private nonprofit that offers training and on-site technical assistance to water operators and governing officials across the state of Minnesota. I come to express my same thoughts as Craig Johnson, and really to go back to that common sense. The tools are in place right now for local officials to make those local decisions that are going to affect the economic growth of that area. They're going to affect the schools that are in their area that may want to put in their own irrigation wells. Municipalities that will put in a banner, will put in an ordinance to protect their infrastructure, they're doing it for the betterment of the whole community. So most of the water systems that go into the state of Minnesota, they are funded by Public Facilities Authority or rural development. And a lot of times they are signing, for the very small communities that we work with, they're signing 40-year notes to pay for that water system for the betterment of that system. They need to be assured, those bondholders need to be assured that the infrastructure within that city and the users that they have within that city are going to be able to pay for that infrastructure. The other rules that municipalities have to abide by is the water conservation rule. And that water conservation rule that was put into place a couple years ago really is kind of triggered all this, because they're required by law to have water conservation rates in place, meaning the people that use the most water are going to buy the high or pay the highest rate because they put the most demand on that system. Letting those users come off that rate and be able to drill their own well and pump as much water as they want to just absolutely defeats the water conservation aspect of that. Municipalities are also required by law to do a wellhead protection plan. In itself, it is very difficult to protect the drinking water recharge area where those protection measures need to be, because the delineation of that area many times goes beyond the boundaries of their jurisdictions anyway. So they have to have committees, and they have to meet with the farming community and maybe watershed people and all those types of individuals that collectively are going to protect that source for the people in a community. Having anybody being able to drill a well for any purpose, you know, that just doesn't make sense. It's very hard for those to be controlled. And, you know, we do have a excellent well code in the state of Minnesota, but 20 and 30 and 40 years from now, businesses move, homes move, those types of things. And even Mike from the Minnesota Department of Health said once those wells are drilled and they're out there, you know, there's not a keeper of those private wells. So just kind of in summary, I think there are the tools right now that are in place. Not every community is going to have that ordinance to keep those private wells out. But municipalities and governing officials have to have a voice at the table. And if that voice is sometimes not exactly correct, Craig is right. Those governing officials get replaced and corrections can be made. But if the municipality doesn't have a voice, then everything is done outside of their control. Thank you.
Certainly. You know, I think for my part, some members have expressed concern about the carte blanche authority that the bill gives individual property owners to drill a well. I think on the other side of the coin, we're seeing a carte blanche authority on the part of the cities currently to prevent all and every. And while some cities might be just fine, I think we see abuse at times in government of its power and its ability to regulate. And so I think I sense a need for a balance. I don't know that it's in this bill or that the committee is ready to do that today. It doesn't sound like it. However, 9 years is a long time to work for something, especially with common sense, and we'd like to see something move forward. But I'm sensing some kind of need for a process for exemption that gets some sort of through an ALJ or something, looking at whether some people should be able to get off the hook, some kind of a process, which, again, isn't here today, but something to look at. I don't know how members feel. Maybe we should lay the bill over. But I hate to see it just, 9 years is a long time to work for something, and it sounds like you have a legitimate concerns. So, Senator Nelson, did you have?
I would be glad to make that motion to lay the bill over, if that's a Senator Youngbauer's wish.
I don't think we need a motion to do that. We can just do it.
You can just do that.
Any further discussion at this point? Did you need to say something, sir?
Well, Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Joe Hensel. I'm from Rochester, Minnesota. I work for the City of Rochester in the Utility Department. And I would echo many of the same sentiments and information shared to you by Mr. Johnson. City of Rochester is certainly opposed to the bill, mainly because it eliminates our leverage to work with our customers to come to a resolution of this type of issue. We have never had to employ or deny a new well in the city of Rochester because we were always able, because of the ordinance on the books, to get them to come to the table and to discuss the issues and come to a resolution. We've got golf courses that use surface water. We have 10 private wells in town. But we need to know in order to operate our system efficiently, we need to know where the wells are, how much they're pumping, and kind of the real-time dynamics of what the impact is of those private wells on the public water supply. I have more notes that I would be happy to share. If hearing is coming to a close, I can just cut it off there. But I would point out a couple of anecdotes that I think make a good point. The City of Rochester has invested $60 million in extending sewer and water to protect drinking water supplies, to protect groundwater, protect the aquifer. We've also cost-shared in the sealing of private wells. Nearly 300 private wells have been cost-shared, and we have paid $182,000 in sealing private wells. So to have this go the other direction with a proliferation of private wells that would be advanced into the drinking water supply is something the City of Rochester would be strongly against.
Thank you. I think we're ready to, Senator Kalish, did you have something? We're ready to lay this over then for additional consideration later. Lay it over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Still on today's agenda, Senate File 382. Senator Cruz moves that the Senate File 382 be recommended to pass and placed on general orders. Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 382 is actually a bill that gives local governments some options, as we've talked about. I want to let you know up front, I'm not trying to condemn the Metropolitan Council. We need to work with them. I'm going to explain to you some of the things that go on, and I believe that most of those happen because of antiquated ways of calculating sewer access charges that we've been talking about, some of those sorts of things. But in reality, what the bill does is allows communities that are on the Metropolitan Council sewer system that if they feel that they're damaged in terms of economically because of these what they feel are random sewer access charges, and I'm going to give you a couple of examples that I have here, or if they're experiencing problems with the groundwater or surface water issues, that they could literally cut the pipe, treat the water there, and then use that treated water for groundwater recharge or surface water recharge, aquifer recharge, the same kind of things I've been talking about. I'll give you the biggest example today that's going to continue to haunt the metro area. It's White Bear Lake. Now, not everybody at the DNR will tell you this because they don't want everybody to know, but White Bear Lake is what's called an aquifer interconnect lake, meaning the level of the lake is directly connected to how high the aquifer is. So as we keep drilling city wells in that area and continue to dump that water down through, I'll keep calling it the Pig's Eye Treatment Plant because it just gives me a better view, even though I think it's a metropolitan regional treatment plant or whatever. It goes into the river. Again, never to return to that area. So we've got more wells being drilled out in that area. We're extending sewer and water, I believe, up through Lake Elmo. Judge Shetton could probably tell me where the latest continuation of that sewer is. But as we continue to pull water out of the aquifer and dump it down the river, White Bear Lake and its beauty and all those nice, high-valued properties will continue to have less and less shoreland and less lake to recreate on. The city of Ramsey has a downtown center that they've come in here with TIF and other things that they've rescued out of bankruptcy, trying to redevelop, and it's also has a direct aquifer interconnect in terms of their city wells. So the DNR will not allow them to drill any more city wells in that area because of the lakes, because of all the sensitive wetlands in that area, and because of the Mississippi River in close proximity. So what we're doing with sewer and water is directly affecting our aquifer. It has been for years. Woodbury lost two wells a few years back. Chanhassen lost one because they're drawing it down, and it does not replenish fast enough. There is not enough rain, nor is there enough rapid recharge areas to recharge the aquifer. Again, I can show you guys all the – I love to sit down and talk about this stuff. It is my passion. I can show you the areas that we've screwed up. I can talk about the karst bedrock that exists over here in the St. Croix area as we get out, you know, Woodbury and beyond. Even on the river right here in St. Paul, we have some of that karst topography. But part of the bill is also in what we call random sewer access charges, and Met Council can talk about that. Because I'm going to say it's not directly their fault, although maybe they have some input on it. We use, members today, a book that tells us if this is a kind of business, then this is the water that's going to be generated, and this is going to be your sewer access charge. Now, the problem with that book is, number one, it's not necessarily accurate on how much water you're using. So when you're paying that access charge, which is a flat fee, you could be paying a horrendous fee for something that you're never going to use. And the best example probably is a fitness club. Let's see where I have that one. Good Life Fitness. It's in a former video store, and the tenant, first tenant, went broke, and they put in a new tenant. The tenant was charged $8,000 for four sack charges in 2009. Now, it's a change of use, and they did add showers, so they did add more water-using capacity. But members, you need to think about, and this is where things are antiquated in these figures, is when you're showering, there's not a whole lot of treatment going on with that water. Yes, you're using water, But in point of fact, you may not be using a large amount of water, but you're charged a SAC charge based on what's the treatment cost. The sewer access charge is supposed to reflect the treatment cost. When that water runs down, actually, it helps out the bar owners and others that have a high level. So a bar is one of the worst things you can have. Actually, the worst thing you can have on a water treatment system is a casino. You have a buffet in there that has high greasy foods. Those greases take a lot of intense treatment to treat. And bars have a high level of what's called biochemical oxygen demand. So when you have alcohol going into the system, it takes a lot of oxygen and a lot of bacteria to break that down. So those are the two worst users, and yet they pay based on basically how many butts you can fit in the room, not on what it actually costs to do things. So here's a guy paying $8,000 to put in a fitness store to try to keep us a little more fit, and I think we all know we need that. So $8,000, it doesn't reflect the actual use nor the cost of treatment. There's another one where a pizza place went broke, but another guy moved in Pepe's Cafe out in Andover, and they ended up paying $2,100 in SAC charges. Now, in that particular case, I know there's no more seats, no more water use, only a different user, and there's a fee of $2,100. The city actually ended up paying it so they could keep a business in there and actually not, you know, have some taxes flowing in. Another one that I think was extremely egregious, and this is out in Andover as well, there's a restaurant called Tanner's, and it's very similar to a lot of your communities. When we had our smoking ban, what did a lot of bars and restaurants do? They went and followed the law, and they put a patio out there, so they were legal for their smokers to go outside and smoke. But the Met Council called this patio some extra footage, and based on this calculation, and again, not Met Council's fault. This book says, well, there's more roof space, so you must charge more. And in this case, Tanner's was charged 7 SAC charges. I don't know exactly what that totaled, but 4 over here was $8,000. So we'll say around $12,000 just so they could do a patio to keep them compliant and keep their smoking folks coming back. No more seats inside for a restaurant, no more water use, no more anything, and roughly a $12,000 charge. And again, based on a book. Members, I don't honestly expect anybody to cut things off, but we're not going to fix the water problem. It gets right back to that water problem, and we need to get rid of those antiquated ways of figuring these things out. I mean, I've heard from other members that it's an issue in your communities, what's going on there with SAC charges. Maybe it reflects actual costs, and maybe it doesn't, but I do know these charges are based on this book. Maybe we need to be the first state in the union to not use that book and to come up with a new way of doing things. I know the legislative auditor is considering looking at SAC charges and investigating whether or not they reflect anything realistic, and I hope that becomes one of those things we look at. I was going to have testifiers today, but we just got it on the agenda yesterday, so my testifiers all run businesses, and they could not at last minute make any time. I don't think anybody showed up. But I think most of you know this happens. I'm not trying to slap Met Council in the face. I'm hoping with our East Bethel plant that sets the pace and that they do have some plans in the future. And you know, I hope Mr. Shetton can come up here and say that we are, in fact, trying to be proactive. So I don't know what he'll have to say, but I hope he comes up and talks to you a little bit about this.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Shetland, you want to start coming up? Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Youngbauer, I have another good story for you. I have a business in Prior Lake that's Fong's Restaurant, and they decided when the video store went out of business next door that they would take over their space and add kind of a banquet area. So it's not really used daily at all. And they didn't change the footprint of the building at all. And they were going to be assessed SAC and WAC charges of $130,000 and for occasional use. And they somehow negotiated down to like $80,000, but the poor guy could not afford it. So it's sitting there unused. Meanwhile, they went to the city of Prior Lake and got some, they're working, they're, maybe they've got the loan now to, the city was going to loan them some money to help them pay these charges because the payment apparently was needed up front and so they could start operating that little banquet facility Meanwhile, you know, they had started taking reservations and then nothing could happen there. But it was $130,000 initially. And it just stunned me because it was probably going to be used two or three times a week. And I think it maybe would have seated 130 people, maximum. And so it was so much that it just made his project impractical to do.
Mr. Chair, I do need to go downstairs to vote. And members, I don't mind if you start discussing while I'm gone. I will be back up as quick as I can.
We will do that, Senator Youngbauer. And if it gets in a situation where we need you, we'll just recess. Mr. Shetland.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And just so the members know, Senator Youngbauer and I have had a conversation. We're actually meeting again on Monday in his office to talk about this and a few other council-related issues. And sorry I missed the beginning of his testimony, but when we talked, he said he wanted to use this as an opportunity to start a conversation, which I think is appropriate, and that's fine. However, if the intention was actually to move forward with this bill, the council does have some pretty serious concerns about it. But if it is to start talking, having a conversation about SAC and some of the antiquated ways we look at this in his perspective, that is perfectly fine, and I think that would be appropriate. I also know that the legislative auditor is considering looking at our SAC program as a potential a program that they will look at over this next interim. And if that is the case, you know, that would be fine as well. Mr. Chair and members, I'm interested if you want us to speak directly to the bill, or if the conclusion would be that we're going to look at this and have it as a conversation starter. We can stop at that and talk about SAC maybe at a broader level. But if you want to speak specifically to the impacts of the bill, we can do that as well. And I have Jason Willett, who's our finance director for our wastewater services system at the Met Council, and we can certainly speak to that as well.
Maybe if members want, we could get a quick explanation maybe of how you end up with some of the outcomes that were expressed here. That'd be good.
Great. Mr. Chair and members, I'll defer that to Jason. Jason, again, is our finance director for the Met Council Environmental Services, which processes the most of the wastewater here in the Seven County metro area. So with that, I'll turn it over to Jason, and I know that he heard some of the comments that were made about the SAC charges and how we came about making those determinations. So with that, I'll turn that over to Jason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jason Willett, I am Finance Director for MCS. That's the Environmental Services Division of the Metropolitan Council, essentially the Metropolitan Wastewater Utility. We are 100% funded by fees. The infrastructure probably is worth about $4 billion in replacement value, so a lot of our fees are pretty hefty. Most of it's volume charges, but what you've been hearing about really relates to the service or sewer availability charge. And I think it's important to distinguish that our fees are all set on a cost of service basis. Volume use is a different service than the availability of capacity. That's a demand function. It's what we have to stand ready to serve, even if it's not used. You might know that certainly your electric bill, your cell phone, other things, you get charged whether you use them or not. It's just the costs of building that infrastructure can be quite hefty. We do have about $1 billion of debt in the metropolitan area for the wastewater facility. So SAC by statute pays for part of that capacity, the sort of reserve capacity portion. It's been used since 1973, and it helps defer some of the volume charges. It's just one of the ways we pay, probably paying 10 to 15% of our overall costs right now, and maybe 30% of our debt service that we have to pay. So there is a lot of history and rules that have been developed since the program was started in 73. And the book we referred to, which is on the web, does say what the criteria are that we charge SAC for any development or change of use, which changes, again, the capacity need. It isn't about the daily use. It's about what we stand ready. And so there is a whole series of rules Those rules have been built up based on building codes and occupancy codes and water studies over the years. We do occasionally refine them when there's been a lot of pressure. For instance, the outdoor space issue, which was particularly controversial a couple years ago, there was public hearings, there was task forces, and then the council did implement a change in, I think it was the fall of 2009. So there, it's actually a 75% discount. So outdoor spaces, that's at least one little area where perhaps it's not quite as antiquated because they don't get used when it rains, and that's the peak issue for the capacity of the wastewater system. So in terms of the determinations for some of the other things, what happens is when a building permit or a sewer use permit occurs, the cities are required to do an evaluation, and they ask us, and sometimes we do it and sometimes they do it, determination of what's the capacity demand for the new use. And if that's different from the old one, there can be a charge. We do give credits for whatever was there previously, so that offsets the charge. If it had been missed, sometimes those seem high. And it's also important to know that our charge, which is $22.30 per residential equivalent unit now, is the same across the metro area, but the cities add on their own fees on that. The retail fee that the businesses you refer to are a different matter. The cities can add on to that fee. They can add WAC, which really the water availability charge we really don't have anything to do with, but often cities do add that on. They have different credit rules. That's local government business, which we don't really have a lot to say about how they do. But sometimes some of these fees get high because cities are paying for their own infrastructure in addition to paying what state law requires them to pay us towards the regional infrastructure. I don't know the specifics of any of these particular determinations. We do thousands a year, but certainly would be happy to look those up if someone were interested in that.
Mr. Chair and members, I can hand out what these worksheets look like if people are interested in taking a look.
Senator Chamberlain. Senator Chamberlain.
I'm sorry. I'm like everybody else. I forgot your name. Mr. Jason?
Jason Willett.
Jason Willett. You mentioned that you have some flexibility in your system, but let's assume that, you know, I'm assuming that these situations are actual. I mean, if you were to look at them, can you, I mean, they are extraordinary, and it really hampers business and puts people out of business. I know a person in White Bear Lake that's trying to get in and has a similar problem. It's an occasional use, a banquet sort of catering business. Are there things on the books now in some of your changes that could address those occasional uses, these banquet facilities, these catering operations? And secondly, is there an appeal process? Do these folks have a process where they can appeal these initial assessments? And thirdly, do these have to be paid up front before they even open their doors?
Mr. Chair and Senator, let me try and answer all of those. First of all, in regard to occasional use, our fees are set. The engineering is based on the maximum use in a 24-hour period, with the exception of this outdoor space. You know, rules can be changed over time, but for the most part, really there isn't an exception. For something, if it's going to be used one day a year, we have to have the pipes and the treatment plant capacities to stand ready to handle that wastewater. And so the fees are based on the maximum 24-hour period as the engineers compute that for sort of a class of use. That is kind of high. Those that only have the occasional use, of course, do get a benefit in that their actual sewer fees for volume will be lower and will reflect that. The second question you had, I believe, was about appeals. Remember, our charges are to the 105 cities that we serve, and the cities may appeal and do occasionally. If something doesn't fit in the rules particularly, or there was some reason perhaps we made a mistake or something, we're more than happy to take those appeals. What happens generally is a business will go to the city, and the city agrees with them, then they'll appeal to us, and we'll give the city a break, and they pass it through. So there are appeals, and that has been happening for a number of years. And your third question was up front, and the answer to that is yes. Our SAC fees to the cities are all up front. They can spread that over time if they wish. I think there's at least one or two cities that do have some sort of payment plans, but historically, you know, we have to have the capacity. We build it in advance, actually. The reserve capacity is already built. We're paying debt service. So as soon as they get a building permit, we charge the cities, and typically they do pass that through up front.
Senator Roebling, a follow-up? Or?
A follow-up. Well, in this case, the use did change, but nobody came and changed any pipes or anything. And, you know, so it was especially puzzling to me. They pulled a permit to do some remodeling. The remodeling cost $30,000, and the SAC charges and SAC and WAC were going to be $130,000. It was just outrageous to me. I was dumbfounded when he called me about it, and I had no explanation. I'm like, I'll find out more. And in fact, I was one of the people who put in the request to the legislative auditor to, when we were asked for topic ideas, check this out. I need to understand this better.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I'd be happy to look at that particular situation. That does seem large. I don't know why that would be. If you want to send us information, we can look at that particular situation.
Senator Kulis, did you have a...
Well, Mr. Chair, I guess one of the things that, because we're adding new businesses, and one of the questions you sort of answered it, as far as thousands of new access charges for businesses or reevaluations per year, that was one of my questions. But the other thing is doesn't the Met Council build ahead of time so that there's capacity as... communities expand, and in order for that to happen, aren't the current users responsible for that bonding payment? With, you know, if the development doesn't happen, we still have to pay for it or whatever. So if we charge after the fact and it costs more to send a mile of sewer the further out you go to get that service done, It just seems to me that we're billing folks after the fact, and then they're complaining because it would cost a whole lot more if we had to install it specifically for their business, wouldn't we?
Mr. Rowland.
Mr. Chair and Senator, indeed, you're correct. We do build reserve capacity in advance, both in the plants and the pipes. If you imagine that we built just for the capacity we need today, when we build a pipe, then we'd have to dig up the street repeatedly. So pipes in particular are built with the idea that we're sort of treating what we think is the ultimate reasonable capacity based on what cities say in comp plans and some market things, frankly, because sometimes comp plans change and we respond to the market. You want to have that capacity built in advance, at least in the pipes, so you don't have to dig them up. In the treatment plants, it's a little bit more sort of built on the average. We're not necessarily ready for every possible build-out to happen at once. The purpose of the state statute, which is 473.517, is to differentiate the cost between current users and future users. Current users are paying for debt service, you know, essentially to keep the system operational, to rehab things, the maintenance costs, and so forth. And this reserve capacity percentage, which is about 30%, is supposed to be paid by the future users. Realistically, when the system was regionalized in the 60s, the sewer board actually sent lump sum bills to the growing communities. And, of course, they didn't have nearly enough population to pay for that. It was quickly controversial and ended. I mean, it just couldn't work that way. The pipes cost millions of dollars. So the SAC system was created so that they only had to pay as they actually built. It also has the benefit of shifting the development risk to the Met Council, to the region, if you will, instead of an individual city. We may have built capacity to your city, fully expecting it would happen, but if whatever happens in the market doesn't happen, you don't have to pay that, your businesses don't have to pay that. And that worked, that diversity worked between cities. You know, Woodbury grew, or Maple Grove grew, or Minneapolis grew. The averaging sort of worked for 35 years. Frankly, though, in the last few years, as you might imagine with the recession, we really don't have much growth anywhere. And so the requirement that the future users pay for this portion of debt service is really hard to match, to meet. So there was a bill last year that you all passed to allow us to shift when financially necessary. A small amount is occurring this year, which we would ordinarily want the future users to pay for, but they just can't. We built this capacity, and there's not enough money there. So the current users, it's $4.5 million this year, and we have to sort of review it annually and pay it back, shift it back when we can. But the whole intent of SAC is to pay for the reserve capacity that is built in advance. The future users should pay for it. It's a cost of service when they buy into the system worth $4 billion.
Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, while we were talking about that, and Senator Kelash mentioned something about, you know, mile of service and things. And the interesting part, and it's about getting people up to speed in our state. You know, I've been in construction. I was in construction for 25 years. I quit that when I got in the Senate. But we got this attitude in Minnesota. Well, we've always done it this way, so we're always going to do it this way. It is cheaper today that the cost for a mile of pipe today is so horrendously expensive that if you do these regional treatment plants that recharge, it's cheaper. It's better, it's cheaper, it's smaller, but our engineering folks in the state of Minnesota, two things. Number one, they don't know about the technology. They've not been trained in the technology. And I always joke this way is, you know, how many engineering firms have a biochemistry process designer on staff? None that I know of except ours, because I understand how to design the best for what's coming through. More and more across the United States, you see that. You just don't see it in Minnesota because we don't have the rules for this recycle and for the specialty areas. But it would actually be cheaper for Met Council to start moving that way on these things, and cheaper for communities and better for the environment. And I'm going to use an example, and you can go figure out the firm because it just ticks me off, and this firm's actually getting a bad rap for doing this. But in a certain city, and I won't even tell you the city so I don't get in too much trouble, they got PFA funds, WIF funds, to do a new treatment sewer upgrade, $16.8 million, state funds, taxpayer money. I went to that city and that engineering firm, and I said, we can do it better for $6.8 million. I wanted to come alongside those folks. I look at every bit of money that we spend in the state as it comes out of my pocket. If I can help somebody to do a better job cheaper, I want to do that. I said, well, we can do this for $6.8 million. I went to the city administrator, the engineering firm, showed them how to do it. Their first answer was, well, Senator, you know, the PCA doesn't like those kind of things. So, well, the PCA doesn't get involved in those permits. It was changing from a direct discharge to a groundwater recharge. And part of the permits they were talking about weren't even applicable anymore because you're changing the dynamics of what you're doing, and you're keeping the water now in the watershed. We kept having that conversation. The city administrator said, well, we'll hire you to kind of help us through that so we can save some money. Well, they never called, and I didn't care if I got hired. I was giving free information. I don't really care sometimes as long as we're saving taxpayer money. Of course, we always like extra work like anybody else. I can use extra work. But I finally got a call from the engineering firm, and he said, you know, Senator, what you don't understand is we get 10% of the job. We'd rather have 10% of $16.8 million than 10% of $6.8 million. We'd rather make that kind of money, so why would I design your $6.8 million? And I looked at him, and this particular firm works in a ton of cities. And I said, because you could give almost three of your cities a new environmentally friendly system for the same price and become the hero of the state and have more work than you can imagine. He said, well, we don't look at it that way. We look at it as we'd rather have one big job than three little ones. And that, members, is a serious problem and a serious attitude that's going on, especially in the wake of little work. People would rather have one big job, and they're over-designing. And the nice thing about these new systems, too, is they're what's called plug-and-play. And you guys could talk about what's sitting down at this treatment plant, but it's not plug-and-play, per se. There's some things you can change. These new systems, literally, if you put a different business on, you can pull out some components. If that system has a different kind of waste discharge, it needs to be treated different. You pull out the component, you plug something else in, and you've just adjusted it to a whole different kind of waste. That doesn't happen with the old-fashioned systems. So we can monitor it for 200 different items so we know it's treating better. To give you an example, and I get so mad at these folks when they talk about recycle. The health department just said, you know, they go, oh, we're using wastewater. Our kids are playing with the grass. You know, they try to picture something awful. Where the heck do they think this? If you've ever drank in the city of Minneapolis water, it comes out of the Mississippi River. 36 plants just on the Mississippi River that discharge north of there are not in compliance, not even counting the ones that are on tributaries. They don't have a clue what they're drinking, but I guarantee you they're drinking recycled wastewater. And they don't tell their citizens that. They're only testing for 70 things there. It's easy to test for these things. These new kind of systems automatically change. You can put them in cheaper, better. We can figure out these things. We're not affecting the groundwater. So this is a conversation starter. For 9 years, I haven't figured out how to make all these conversations work. So this year, I'm plugging a lot of bills in to make conversations, because I look at it as I can't afford to spend the rest of my life here, members. We need to change the way we're doing business. This is a bill that allows that opportunity. I think it's not written correctly to get it done, but it certainly got the right people to the table to start the conversation.
Can I follow up? Senator Jungbauer, with your cost of laying sewer pipe being so expensive, I'd be glad to work with you on an anti-sprawl bill. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like that's what you're interested in as well. So I'm sure that would also help the whole system.
Mr. Chair and Senator Gilash, I have worked with the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul to show them how to take down old buildings, build new factories here, and use these kind of plants where you don't have the capacity, because you can treat it there and reuse it. We've even looked at the city of Minneapolis and proposed to take some buildings offline because we can treat the water in these kind of situations. You know what the Minneapolis Public Works said to me? And I worked with the mayor, and the mayor was appalled, but they couldn't change it. The Public Works said, we need the money. Even if you take it offline, we're still going to charge you for sewer and water.
It's the capacity issue.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, certainly the example, Senator Jungbauer, that you brought out, you know, none of us want to see some of that happen. And I think you've admitted that this bill may not address some of those issues anyway, and it is a conversation starter, because I'm reading they're saying, well, that won't stop that. But I mean, I appreciate that you're, you know, getting people to the table, and I'm expecting that we're probably not going to vote on this particular bill then. I'm glad that you're thinking about these issues. I think we need to deal with the capacity issue. I mean, we do have to have capacity in a system, and if we let certain people, you know, get themselves out of or, you know, remove themselves from the paying into the capacity, then it just raises the prices for everybody else. And so then, you know, well, a lot of local municipalities would opt out, and that would leave, I don't even know who would be left to pay, because I'm sure everybody would try to opt out of this. Mm-hmm. So I don't know who else would be paying the bills then. So obviously there are some concerns about this bill, and I support you in bringing people to the table to talk about this.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator McGuire, I appreciate that, because what I've learned, this is my ninth year here, sometimes you have to offer a bill and you can make a change without any hearing. Other ones that get a little more controversial, you got to actually get the guys at the table and they start saying, yeah, we should be thinking a little bit more about that. But it informs other members of the legislature who start talking to other people. You affect change. Just for fun, you know, because you guys have been sitting here often, I'm going to tell you something that's changed just by me offering a bill without a hearing this year. I offered a bill to change the primary seatbelt law and not allow for sting operations the way they've been doing them with these homeless people at the top of the freeway ramps and stuff. Minnesota and our governor changed that policy. They are no longer allowed to have those kind of sting operations on seatbelts just because I offered the bill, made it visible, and that's what I've learned. I've done a few other ones over the years. We're just offering the bill, having hearings like this. Policy gets changed because people start talking, but if you're not talking about it, nothing ever changes.
Further discussion?
Two quick ones.
Senator Chamberlain.
I'll be quiet. Two quick questions. One for Senator Jungbauer. I'll put it all in one package, and then one for Mr. Roulette. Senator Jungbauer, on line 119 there, if the city declines sewage discharge services, what would happen then? Would it go to regional facilities? And secondly, clearly, Mr. Roulette, there's a problem with some of these charges. This kind of talked about this earlier. Is there a way that you can address these egregious acts? And that's what we're talking about. We all understand the need for sewers and processing and plants, but certainly there are cases where businesses and cities and communities are being harmed by I'll use the word draconian charges paid up front by small businesses that wish to start up. So we all understand we need it, but at some point there has to be some mitigating factors that allow for this other stuff to change. So Those couple of questions and all. That's it.
Mr. Chair. Senator Youngbaugh. Chamberlain. I actually think this bill could be used, not maybe the way Met Council sees it today, but here's how it could be used. Wherever you're treating the sewage, you still need the main trunk lines and the interceptor lines. Those are already in the ground. Met Council's put them there. But as we see the need to recharge the groundwater, you literally could cut off the pipe anywhere you want, put it into these treatment facilities. You want it near some place where you can have a groundwater recharge. So you could do exactly what they're talking about, line 119, when you're declining the sewage discharge services and provide your own sewage disposal system. That's what I'm talking about. Cutting it off, you still have to get a permit from Pollution Control Agency, likely DNR because of the groundwater recharge, those sorts of things. So you still would have to qualify for all that, but I still would anticipate that that could be a great discussion between Met Council and local units of government, because Met Council still put the investment in the sewer trunk lines and still needs to get that paid back. So I don't envision them not getting paid for all the money they put in up front.
Senator Youngbaugh, most of the controversy seems to center around lines 119 to 123. Looking at 220 and 221, or 219 and 221, that does address a good part of your concerns, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chair. However, I don't know how we get around that, and Senator Roebling made a good point, because I think we're still using the book and to address that banquet center. These are based on how many, and I think I used the term loosely earlier, how many butts you can get in the door and sit down to serve. That's how this SAC charge is assessed. So if you have a banquet hall, even if you're using it once a month, they're assuming that peak flow in that 24-hour period when the banquet room is used, that's the flow that you're going to pay for. And if you filled it up 24 hours a day, every day of the week, it would be deserving of that charge. But until we allow an exception for occasional use and until we have a calculation for that, so I don't know how we fit that into this, because that's part of the problem, is addressing occasional use within the access charge book.
Senator Youngbaugh, it would give somebody a lot better position to argue if they were going to appeal a decision like that, wouldn't it?
Definitely, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kaler.
I think this bill still needs a lot of work. I think we keep trying to figure out how to do the SAC charges, and you know, the testimony has been if the capacity is there for the intention of the new users that need the extra capacity, how it's decided could be is not in this bill. How we decide what those SAC charges are not in this bill. I think this bill doesn't really take it in the direction that we're talking about here as far as the charges going. So it seems to me that it just needs a lot more work and clarity. And one of the things that allows for a community to build their own sewer treatment plants and stuff, and that just doesn't seem to be possible with this economy. And that's the whole reason we have regional sewer system and why the Met Council exists, so that we can control all that in one setting. So I guess I just think it needs more work, and maybe we should just table it for now. And
Senator Kalish, I don't know if there's anything real controversial about not allowing it. I mean, we tell local units of government all the time they can't charge a charge that's in excess of the service, the cost of providing the service, or treat one person a lot different than another person with the same facilities. And that's what I'm talking about. I don't think there's much controversy to 219 to 221. I don't know if I'm missing.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I think the problem, I'm in Minneapolis, and we've been paying to build this system for decades, and to say that somebody that is new, coming onto the system new, shouldn't have to pay for the capacity that my rate payers and my constituents to pay for that extra capacity. The only reason that capacity is there is to anticipate that growth, and part of that growth is having a sewer system available for them. So if it costs them a little more than it does for SAC charges rather than rate charges, it's because the Met Council anticipated that there was going to be growth. And, you know, it's actually probably a bargain for those places because it was built with cheaper dollars and cheaper construction costs prior to their ever getting out to that that extra capacity in those lines. And those that extra capacity is always is also built into the metropolitan area, Minneapolis and St. Paul proper. So we pay those SAC charges too, but it's one thing to, you know, if you've been paying for the system for years and somebody new to the system is able to get on for the same rate, it means that they're not paying for the infrastructure that was there, and that's what these SAC charges are intended to address. So it seems to me that this is to try allow new folks in the system for something for nothing. Maybe I'm wrong with that, and they could be corrected by the Met Council, but...
Senator Youngbauer.
I think I have an idea here. Now, maybe everybody won't like it, but I think Mr. Chair and members, you're kind of right, is what we're... Something we can agree to try to get to for now is lines 2.19 to 2.21. However, I think the way to do this would be to lay it on the table, to negotiate, try to negotiate something out. Mr. Chair or members, do you know another bill we could, if we can figure out something that makes sense to Met Council that gets at some of these issues, that we could do an amendment on the floor where the committee members, you know, could talk and support it if we get something worked out so we know we're working in that direction? And secondly, the legislative auditor will be picking next week.
Next week.
When, if this is an issue that gets looked at, and if it is an issue that gets looked at, I'm fine with that. We're moving it that direction as well. So, you know, we can still try to move things a little bit later as long as we've had a hearing thus far and got the issue out on the table. So, mm-hmm. I'd like to move something if we can, but it's not, I don't think we can fix this bill or a portion of this bill to do it. So I'd probably rather do it as an amendment on the floor if we can figure it out to another bill.
Mr. Chair, to that, Senator Youngbauer, you had the bill in the environment on the recharge, the language and all that stuff. Would this fit into that? I think it kind of does, but I'm not sure if it's enough.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, I don't know for sure, but we're still working on that one, too.
Definitions and all of that, and that got passed out of the committee, didn't it?
So I don't want to do anything in haste. I like to be very thoughtful on what I do.
Is that a vehicle for this to go on to?
Possibly be. So let's think through that. But I wanted to have the discussion so we could see if there's anything we can move forward on to protect our constituents that makes sense to Met Council as well. And we've got some folks chomping at the bit to comment on that.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll be very brief. My name is Patricia Nominant. I'm the executive director of Metro Cities. We represent cities in the 7-county metro area at both the Capitol and the Met Council. We are the primary watchdog for cities at the Met Council. And I just wanted to say, first of all, overall, we do, and I appreciate Senator Youngbauer's willingness to step back and take a look at this issue. But our policies generally support a SAC program that emphasizes equity, simplification, and low SAC rates. We think we're concerned about this bill in terms of those goals that we have, primarily because we are concerned that the bill could undermine, you know, like it or not, cities and the Met Council are kind of in this together, even though we often do have healthy tensions with the council around this program. But we do think that there is concern about having this bill would potentially undermine the regional provision of a service that really is cost effective on an economy of scale. And so the concern about equity there is significant for us. We are not averse to studying the SAC program. We had recommended a task force on the overall SAC program 2 years ago. The Met Council did convene a task force, and we spent time talking both about the overall SAC structure and who should pay for what, as well as the criteria for SAC. And that, I think, if I'm recalling correctly, we spent just as much time on looking at the criteria for SAC as we did sort of the overall program. And so we are very open to having that discussion, looking at sort of how the charges work and how the credit structure works. And we think that should be an ongoing issue that really gets talked about in the SAC structure overall. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to mention the SAC task force as well that Ms. Nauman just did. The final report actually is on our website if you were interested in that. There were city representatives on there. There were industry representatives. There was association representatives of three or four flavors. And we did talk about these issues. I don't think anybody thinks that SAC is perfect. And certainly to the question that was earlier, is there a way to handle the occasional use? Well, there are lots of different ways you could charge for capacity. You know, right now, it's sort of a maximum 24-hour. Maybe there's another thing we could look at. The criteria were all built on codes, you know, a long time ago with some water studies when controversies came up. And actually, one of our hopes is that some cities now are starting to actually meter daily. They can meter daily data, so we'll be able to get some information.
Do you have an ability to do that? Do you have the authority or power to do that, adjust those fees yourself, the council?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The authority that is in the statute is very broad about charging for reserve capacity using the SAC system, but the details were left to the council. We always go through a public process before we do any material change, but it's not specific in the statute.
Okay. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering, I do think that the provision in the bill, which we haven't really discussed much today, is allowing some local units of government to disconnect, so to speak, from the regional system is probably very controversial. I don't think that the statement from 219 to 221, it's really just, I think it's asking you to re-examine your, you know, how you're charging so that it is proportional to the discharge that's coming into your system. I don't think that is a very difficult requirement. I mean, I think they're doing it all the time, and we want them to continue to do it. Would it work if at this point we struck the, subdivision 3 and, or no, let's see, section 1 and just left section 2? We could move that on to environment. I don't know, Senator Jenbauer, if you even have another bill moving in the House that's a companion or anything. I don't know if it'll meet deadline. I just don't know where you want it to be, really. If it's a 2-year process, then maybe it can stay here, or if you want it to move to environment, I'm not sure.
Well, let's get a couple other ones. I'll speak to that. Mr. Chair, and Senator Roebling, I think that Senator Jungbauer has raised an important issue here. Obviously, the issue that you had in your district is certainly something that may leave some of us scratching our heads about why that there was such a large SAC fee there. What I have talked to Senator Jungbauer about and I've mentioned earlier in my testimony is that it looks like the auditor is going to potentially be looking at this. And what I would like to do, if it would be possible, would just be to wait so we can work with the folks from Metro Cities, work with Senator Jungbauer, and work with whoever is interested to see how we might want to move forward with this. I think the language is it seems like it's reasonable, but at the same time, as Jason mentioned, we have the ability, the council has the ability to do this as well, since we have broad statutory authority. And I guess what I would prefer is the opportunity for the council to have this, keep this conversation going, specifically on this area as well, because the language in Section 1, there are some major problems there for the council. There's no doubt about that, and that's what I was talking about when I said earlier that we'd like to, if we're just going to have this as a conversation starter, we'll sit with that. But I would prefer, and obviously you're the lawmakers and have the opportunity to move forward whatever you would like, but I'd like the opportunity to work with Senator Jungbauer and yourself even to figure out how we could move forward with taking a look at SAC. But I also don't want to get out in front of the legislative auditor on this as well, because I guarantee you that that if they look at SAC, that will certainly be one of the areas that will be raised, and I'm sure Senator, you and Senator Jungbauer would probably point that out.
Mr. Shetland, the only problem I see is our constituents don't have a lot of time. We have a situation in our economy where one of the things that I firmly believe is impacting the development in the metro area is the excessive costs of doing so. And with the new economic situation, we should be taking pretty direct action to the best of our ability to make it easier for projects to move forward. And this is certainly an inhibition to that, just from what we've heard today. So, Senator McGuire?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just on some of these points, I'm, of course, in favor of, you know, sort of looking at this in a little more depth, but it seems as though there's some fixed costs here that we're just deciding who's going to pay for them. Right. Either it's people that are newly on the system, and if they don't pay for them, the rest of us are going to. So, I mean, yes, people want lower costs, but there's some fixed costs here that, okay, if we don't have some of these costs, and I think it needs to be fair, and I think I totally support them looking at this, but I would be, I mean, I think changes. That it is going to be a question of who is paying these costs. Is this going to be spread out to the rest of us if we lower it over here? And I think it needs to be more fair, but I just know the bulge is going to turn up somewhere else, and I would like to see it be done in a more, you know, if the legislative auditor is coming out with a report, if there's already a task force that's working on it, I'd like to see a little more work done. And Senator Youngbauer, by his own admission, has said he wanted to get the discussion started. And believe me, you've got the discussion started.
Well,
I think.
Senator.
Mr. Chair and members, actually, I think there's a way to actually take that if there's members are interested in doing it, maybe the council wouldn't like it, because I do know that significant increase could be bad, but I've always argued that it is the sewer discharge, it's not the capacity, because the books assume certain amounts of water use, and quite honestly, in real life in Minnesota, we don't use anywhere near what the books say we should use, but we could talk about it. And since it has to go to another committee, if we were interested in moving just this portion, I would look at, and council could help us with it. It does not result in an increase in water use from the property that exceeds the calculations of the existing sewer access charge, because these are calculated based on a certain amount of basically gallons per day of water use. So if we're going to look at it that way, we could mandate that business, if they want to make sure they're not charging a sewer access charge above and beyond what was paid for by the original tenant, that they must meter their water, and that water amount of use must not exceed what that calculation was for that original sewer access charge. That would start to help this whole process along.
Because, Senator Youngbauer, this is an existing property, right? That's just being...
Yes.
Changing the user.
Right, and we're talking about whether or not, Mr. Chair, whether or not there was a significant increase so they would have to pay a sewer access charge. When we're talking about those sewer access charges, those are based on, as I said, butts in a seat or amount of water used, capacity used. We'll call it water because it's judged by capacity. But if you were to meter that and say the guy paid two sewer access charges, that equates to X amount of gallons per day, and that meter shows that that's not being exceeded, there shouldn't be a new sewer access charge.
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair and members, the issue is that what Mr. Willett explained earlier is that we generally apply the SAC charge before the business has started. So it would be really hard to be able to figure out if they're using that same amount through that monitoring after the fact.
Well, then how are you figuring out what the new charge that you're giving them?
We do, Jason, Mr. Chair, Jason can speak to that.
Mr. Chair, as I try to describe it probably poorly, there's a bunch of analysis of the maximum capacity that could be used for different types of businesses. In this manual, it's on the web, there are pages of criteria. For instance, we've been talking about restaurants. 10 seats in a restaurant is equivalent to what a house needs for capacity, and they pay one seat. Many different kinds of businesses based on code, water studies, and so forth. But the important thing to gather from this discussion is we're trying to charge our fees on a cost of service basis, just like the Chamber and others are trying to get Excel to do. You know, that this is the capacity that we stand ready to serve is different than the use. And whether you use it or not, we have to incur the cost to build the pipes and the treatment plant for that capacity. And so we think that's fair, and we need to be very careful about the language mixing the capacity, the sort of demand, if you will, with discharge and volume and use things, which we see as really a different service.
Senator Youngbauer.
Mr. Chair and members, it's in fact not a different service. And in fact, everything is calculated at the plant by gallons per day and what's flowing through it. So if you ask them how big their plant is and what it'll take in, it's going to be based on gallons per day. The problem is wastewater doesn't get treated well if it's underserved. And so when you actually build excess capacity, these guys maybe don't understand this, you're better off to have the treatment happen at full capacity because the way you design it with air and bacteria and things that are in the plant, they operate best at maximum capacity. So when you build extra capacity, you actually do not treat the waste as well as you should. In fact, that's something I've argued for years. The best wastewater treatment plant in the state of Minnesota on its best day treats about 68% of harmful contaminants, where an on-site system, on average, designed after the 1998 standards, treats 98% of harmful contaminants. So you need to understand that. And again, you're averaging. You may have a good day. You may have a bad day. But I'm talking about the averages. So everything is based on gallons per day, but they're building in excess capacity, and it gets back to that water again. If you're starting to meter and you're starting to watch what you're doing, we're all helping each other because you're conserving and you're hitting a target. And when I build an on-site system for commercial use for restaurants and things, we make them meter the water. That system is designed for no more than X amount of gallons per day, and we make sure that it's operating that way to do that. So even though they're talking about capacity, that capacity is based on gallons per day, which the book is based on, which is, in Minnesota, our home treatment systems are, in fact, above and beyond what you need. They have a bounce rate of about 50%, meaning you could have all your friends and family over for Christmas and stuff, and now you're operating at maximum capacity that is designed for to actually handle on a daily basis. So it is a factor of gallons per day, so you can measure it by water use.
Mr. Chair, Senator Jungbauer, the fact that the Metropolitan Council does not supply the water means that they don't have access to gallons used by day, and it really doesn't matter. You still have to pay for the pipes in the ground for the expansion. What you're suggesting is, to me, is that the Met Council has to cut back on the amount of capacity it builds into the system for the sole purpose of, if it can't get enough SAC charges to pay for the part of the system that they're expanding to, there's no reason to build it. And to say that all the rest of the ratepayers should be paying for the expansion is what, and that's what you're saying by saying just the flow. Just the flow. It's more than just the flow. The pipe is in the ground, whether it's filled up or whether it's half full.
Actually, Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, in this paragraph, we're not saying anything like that. We are taking a tiny bit. In a box, we're taking an existing property that already paid a SAC fee, already based on a use, and that use was based on flow.
Which hasn't changed.
All we're saying is if that hasn't changed, and if we put a water meter on there to document that the new business is not, so that they're not paying up front, and if they, in fact, use more, have at it. Charge them that. But don't burden that business if the use that was already paid for is not exceeded.
Mr. Chair? I think you may have been out of the room, but Mr. Willard testified exactly to that. If the Video Star used 2 units and the new restaurant in there needed 4... 10 units, you paid only the difference in SAC charges between the 2 and the 10. So, I mean, that's already in place. We're talking about the change in use causes the change in need for capacity. And that's what we're asking the SAC charges to pay for, that capacity that's built into the system. We have to pay for the capacity, whether it's through the SAC charges or else ratepayers have to pay it.
Well, again, we're in these cases that we're bringing up, we're not talking about that. We're talking about that people added something different, or maybe they changed the use but didn't actually change the way the water came in or went out of the existing property that was already paid for.
Yes, if the use was changing, then this wouldn't apply, in other words.
No, it's you're saying here. It says...
Or change in property.
A change in property use... or addition to the property that does not result in...
And we already do that.
Well, it's not being reflected. That's what we're saying. It's not
it
being
is.
Reflected.
It is.
In the
one that you handed out.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Roblin.
I think we should just focus on Section 2. And
quite frankly, we might not even have to focus on Section 2 if the legislative auditor picks this as their topic. But if we want to keep it alive to see if they do, maybe we should. I should offer an amendment right now to delete Section 1 as an amendment.
Senator Robley moves to delete Section 1. Discussion.
So no increase in use.
And go ahead.
And correct the title and all that.
On line 3.12, we'd also need to delete Sections 1 and then insert section, so it only applies.
Okay, discussion to the Roebling amendment. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. Senator Youngbauer, to your bill.
You can offer that.
Further discussion.
They just did.
No.
Sorry,
Senator. Mr. Shetland.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I was just asking Senator Youngbauer here real quickly if he was going to offer the amendment changing the language from the significant increase in sewer discharge from the property, because that is that's troublesome.
Senator,
because
Youngbauer.
Trying to figure out what a significant increase
Mr.
is.
Mr. Chair, members, figuring out what a significant increase is, and I don't remember how I put it when I thought about it the first time, but I thought that was a good. And it does, I want to be clear, does this have to go, if it has to go to environment, I'm okay with this so we can work on it.
It is going to environment.
Okay. Because I will not let it go forward if we don't have another stop and we can't work on things.
That's good.
But I wanted to say, if it does not result in an increase in water use over the original SAC charges, something like that, I don't remember how I put it. I thought council was looking at that.
Ms. Stangle, do you have
or,
I only got about the first half of it the first time, so
okay.
I don't have all of it either.
Mr. Shetland says we can fix it in environment.
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Youngbauer and I have a meeting on Monday, so why don't we just talk about it there? Move it and talk about it.
All right, so further discussion, seeing none. Senator Cruz renews his motion that Senate File 382 be recommended to pass and as amended and re-referred to the Committee on Environment. Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say no. Motion prevails. The bill is
Thank you very much, members, for your indulgence in all this great stuff that I'm passionate about that you probably don't like to hear.
Business before the committee.